What's up, guys? This is Mike.
And this is Leo.
And welcome to the Asian Menswear Podcast, a podcast made specifically to empower, inspire, and motivate the next generation of Asian American men to live their best lives. This is for us.
Welcome back, guys. This is Mike, your host for the Asian Menswear Podcast. Hope you guys are doing well. I got Leo Chan with me, co-host. He's here today with me. We're going to be talking about, we're going to have a barbershop talk. And today we're going to be talking about our experience being Asian American in America. And I think Leo's going to be taking the wheel for this one. We're going to be talking about like certain nuances about being Asian American, some of the experiences that we dealt with growing up, like from our homeland name to visiting home, and how we were almost living in a middle world between two cultures. And I'm sure a lot of you guys can probably resonate and relate to things that we're going to talk about. And even just like trying to fit in America. And by doing so, you also kind of take away from your identity, you know, your true identity. And I think both of us have done that. So it'll be interesting just to see our perspective. Obviously, Leo is he's an immigrant from Hong Kong. And I was born in Dallas, Texas. So very interesting. What's going on, Leo?
Hey, what's up? So this episode, really, I got inspired by just a lot of Asian women have been speaking up in social media in the past week, especially with what's happened with the anti-Asian racist attack, and of course with the sad terrorist attack in Atlanta. And so I think now has also really inspired a lot of people to just speak up and talk about their experience. And that really inspired me. I think one post specifically, someone said that they were too American for Asia at the same time, too Asian for America. And another way that they kind of said it too was like, they feel like they're too Western for the East, but then too Eastern for the West. And so that really gave me a lot of perspective, because like Mike said, I'm an immigrant. I came from Hong Kong, born and raised in Hong Kong, then moved to New York City when I was 10. And so right off the bat, I feel like I have such a typical immigrant story in a way. I think like we'll just kind of start from the beginning. I feel like, so as an immigrant in New York City, with other lots of immigrant in New York City, but as an Asian guy, you know, number one, I think it's the craziest thing is when you see someone, you introduce yourself, you say your name first. That's like the first thing you kind of say. But yet, growing up, I've always been in a way like ashamed of my name, because it's a Chinese name. That's my legal name. And right off the bat, this might be the first time I'm saying like publicly. So exclusive.
That's what this is for. Exclusive.
So my Chinese name is Chan Ho Wing. And
Chan Ho Wing.
And I'm really proud of the name, actually. I love the meaning behind my name. It's, you know, obviously my parents gave me this name. And it actually stands for grand, like a big, big, grand honor. And so I've always loved what my character stood for, what how it's written, the meanings behind it. I've always loved it. But the problem is, when it came to the English translation, I got made fun of a lot. Like I got made fun of almost like immediately when I started elementary school in New York City. And I got picked on by immigrant kids. Like I got picked on by kids from different race, from different, you know, classes. And I was just like, what the hell? Like my Chinese name is great. Like I love my name, but the American translation is what messes it up. And kids kind of made fun of it. And so growing up, I definitely got picked on and got made fun of for my name.
What do you mean the translation?
The way it's spelled out and written in English.
Oh, how is it spelled out?
So it's like H-O-W-I-N-G.
H-O-W-I-N-G.
Yeah.
Hoeing.
But they'll make fun of me for
Hoeing.
And yeah. It's like, I come to America, I'm like, what the hell is ho, right? And it was just so annoying, because as a kid, you're like, what the hell? So I definitely got into fights with kids because they're making fun of me. And then obviously they can make fun of something else. They can make fun of the fact that I'm Chinese. They can call me, you know, ching chong, they can call me all these stupid things as kids. But that was just one example. And that's one example, like, rarely people know my legal real name. Very, very few people. Mm. And it's still something that, you know, I don't just openly share. Like, I put my Chinese name in my profile. Like, people ask for my name, my Chinese name is in there. If you know how to read Chinese, there you go. You know my name. Because I'm proud of the Chinese name. I'm proud of the Chinese characters. But the English translation, I don't own it. I don't want it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's because of my experience growing up with that. Well, whereas for you, like, how was that for you? Do you have an Asian name?
Yeah, so my legal name is Michael Tran.
Okay.
But my, you know, my like homeland name isn't in there. It's just the name that my parents give me and they use at home. Mm. So my name is crazy because, so I didn't like my name either, just because of how it sounds, just like how you say Huying.
Yeah.
But my name is spelled H-U-Y and it's pronounced Hui. So it's like Hui. Mm-hmm. And I literally just, because you were talking about like the significance of your name, like what it means. I literally just looked it up just now.
Wow.
And I had no idea. And it says personal name meaning bright and glowing.
Ooh. Wow. I can see that.
Damn,
I feel like, that. Like, I feel that hell? When I see you. That's your energy.
Yeah, so I'm like, what the hell? So did my parents like really, were they thoughtful enough to, I gotta ask my.
Wait, hold on a second. You never looked it up until right now?
No, I literally just looked it up right now. No, wow. I literally looked it up right now. Because I didn't know it had meaning.
Is that your full name? Or is that a nickname?
It's not in my birth certificate. It's just like a nickname. But like, it's my name in Vietnamese. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm called at home. But on my birth certificate, it's just Michael Tran.
Gotcha.
So I never liked the wee because I would always think like wee or something, you know?
Mm.
So I would never tell anyone about it. And now, like, as I'm older, like now I have an actual meaning behind wee versus like Mike or Michael. There's no meaning behind those names, right? Mm. I got to ask my dad about it. I wish I could ask my mom. You know, she's not around anymore, but it'd be interesting to know about that story. So I'm sure a lot of you guys, I don't know what names you guys have, but I don't know if you guys have felt, you know, like, not wanting to share. So for me, it was easy for me to hide it because it's not anywhere. No one can find it unless I tell you that. And I think for the longest time, I don't even know if my closest friends know my real name or my Vietnamese name.
Man, this is exclusive. The world so exclusive.
I think even my girlfriend, like I just told her about it.
Damn. Then,
yeah. We've been together almost 3 years now. So,
wow.
And she's like, what? You have a name? Like, she's like, and I was like,
I appreciate you telling me this. This is very important in our friendship as well. For the podcast to continue. This is a very important moment.
But that's like the point, right? We show a vulnerability so that others can share.
Well, as for us as Asians, it's like, we can relate. I'm not going to make fun of you. You're not going to make fun of me.
Yeah.
Like, we've been there. Like, we know what it's like to be made fun of, to have that sense of like, oh, I need to hide this because what if they think of this? Like, between Asians, it's like, oh yeah, I get it. Oh yeah, your name is cool. Oh yeah, I get it. I can see why people make fun of you. Yeah, thanks for sharing. Like, we get it.
Yeah.
And I think that's why this episode, I hope it's helpful because people can relate. And it's literally, our names are complete, like, the story is completely opposite. Whereas my legal name is my Chinese name, whereas your legal name is essentially your American name.
Yep, exactly.
So did you get make fun of in school growing up for your name or for being Asian?
Dude, that's the crazy part. I don't remember being made fun of at all. Or at least I don't remember. But the one incident that stood out to me happened in middle school. And basically there's this girl like I've known since like, you know, like we were in preschool, kindergarten, all the way up to the sixth grade. And I just remember she used to have like this huge crush on me for years. Like she was obsessed with me. Like when I would walk to school, they'd be like, Michael Tran, like crazy, like a whole entourage, right?
I need to fact check that. I don't know if you're cool or not.
No, 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 I'm serious. It's crazy. And in sixth grade, I think middle school is when kids start to really like, they start to find their groups. You start to form up. And where I lived was like a large Latino community. And this is where I guess she was starting to find her peoples. And then I remember I did something, maybe I cut her in line or did something, you know, just dumb, just foolish. Mm-hmm. And then she like, she said something Chinese.
Oof.
And then that was like the first time I really like, because it had to have had an impact on me because I still remember to this day.
Yeah, tell us.
And she said something like fucking Chinese or Chino or something like that. Mm. And then I think that was the first time like my ethnicity was like at the point of this insult.
Mm.
And then, yeah, I don't know. It's weird like that I still remember it. And but other than that, like from then, I don't really remember a lot of like instances where I ran into racism at all, to be honest.
It's kind of different when, you know, as kids, it's like, oh, hey, loser.
Yeah.
Hey, stupid. Yeah. But then if they're just like, yo, Chinese, it's like, damn.
Right, wait. Whoa.
You have to
go there.
You have to go specifically about my race. It's like, it cuts a little deeper.
I think that's why. And I think at the time, like, I was kind of confused, you know, like as a kid, I don't have like older cousins. I don't have old, like, my brothers were all going through this the same. We're all learning about it. As well as my parents, they'd never been through the school system. So how would they know that kids act like this? Or like, we would be dealing with being embarrassed about our names or being confused about our identity.
Yeah.
And I think, for me, like I was literally probably besides me and one other person. No, I think in elementary, I was like probably the only Asian.
Wow.
And then in middle school, I was probably one of like three or two.
Jeez.
And the other one was like a grade above me. And she was, you know, we would walk past the halls and we would see each other. And we'd just be like we knew, hey, we're going through the same things, you know?
Yeah.
It's so weird. And then I was lucky enough that my parents actually moved me out, after sixth grade to go to California. So I think I escaped the potential of being like bullied or dealing with racism because in Texas, you know, there's not a lot of Asians. I got lucky because then I moved to California where, boom, Asians left and right, like sorts of Asians.
Do you imagine it would have got worse if you did like high school in Texas? Is that what you're kind of saying?
I'm pretty sure. I think so, man. Because yeah, again, like it's Texas. We're in the South. Mm-hmm. And there's not a large population of Asians there. So can you imagine? Like, and a lot of the kids there are like immigrants too. Like the Latinos, like their parents are like immigrants. Right. So they probably don't even have a lot of knowledge around Asians anyway. So I don't know. My life probably would have been way different. And I think that's the reason why I created Asian Menswear, because I was able to see the perspectives
from different people.
Yeah. I was able to see what it felt like to be the only Asian and how that can really mess up your mind and make you feel ashamed of being Asian. Because before then there was no history, right? We don't learn about Asian American history in our history books, even though we have an impact in history. So there's really nothing to be proud of now that I'm learning, now that I'm much older and I'm starting to understand. There was something that was written by Charles Melton. He's like a celebrity or he's like half Korean, half German or something. And he was talking about him like hiding all of his Koreanness.
Oh, wow.
And he felt like because he never learned about any history, any Asian Americans like contributing to US history, you don't have this sense of proudness, you know, or if you don't know your own heritage, which I never did. I never had these conversations with my parents. I never understood what they had to go through to come to America. We never talked, you know? So I think because of that, I feel like I'm just like this lone vessel with no meaning, no purose.
It was like you're Asian, but you don't really identify being Asian. Like you didn't feel like Asian at all. It just felt
exactly.
Like this is what I look like, right?
Exactly. So I was so confused growing up. And then it was until I got to California when I was able to finally start to, it's like a lot of Asians, this happens when they get to college, they started to see a lot of Asians. Then they're like, whoa, like Asians is cool. I didn't reverse all that psychological damage that happened in Texas until I got to California. It kind of slowly helped me build it again. That's so weird, man.
Wow.
So I know how powerful, and because I know how powerful it is, that's the reason why I created Asian Menswear, because I know it is powerful and it can be very deadly.
Oh, wow. You know? That's awesome. I think that's why, like, even from the beginning when we first met, I appreciate your page because, you know, my page with Levitate Style, I'm trying to change the Asian perspective in terms of content and image and lifestyle.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Whereas you're very educational. You're teaching us about history. Mm-hmm. You're teaching us about other Asian men in different industries and their histories. And it's like,
proof. I
never heard of any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be as small as something or as big as something. And it's like, geez, I've just never heard of any of that.
Yeah. What about you, man? Like, what is your experience growing up?
I think like it's so interesting. It's so, that's why I love what we're talking about on this podcast, because, you know, you were born in America, you were born in Texas, and you were the only Asian in your school. Whereas on the other hand, I'm an immigrant and I'm in New York City and it's super diverse.
Right.
I wasn't the only Asian, but I always felt like it was super competitive. So, you know, not only am I an immigrant, I'm learning English as my second language. So I'm in different schools and I was not the only Asian. There was definitely like a good amount of Asians in some of these schools, easily like 10%, 20%. But then here's the other problem. It's a whole ABC versus the FOBs. The American-born Chinese.
Yeah.
You know, and like growing up as an immigrant, I'm telling you, as an immigrant, I'm just like, I'm just going to shut up. I'm going to work hard. I got to do what I got to do. I don't got time to, you know, fight with everyone. Mm-hmm. And in a way, it's like, growing up as an immigrant, as a FOB, it's like, oh, I guess the ABCs are better than me. So not only am I dealing with racism and discrimination from different race, I'm also dealing with my own race. I'm dealing with the American-born Asians, the American-born Chinese, because, yeah, sure, they were born here first, and they speak English first, and they do better in school. So not only am I competing with other immigrants, now my parents are like, well, what about these Asians in school? You have to do better than them. And it just becomes a whole thing where I wasn't the only Asian, but I felt like I was competing with everyone, even against my own people.
Yeah.
And it's a whole culture thing, right? Like American-born Chinese, they already have a certain culture. They already celebrate, I don't know, Christmas, or they live an American life. So as an immigrant, it's like, well, no, I still eat, I don't know, traditional Chinese food. Like, I don't get to eat McDonald's every day. I try to think like these kind of American examples, and it's just like, you live different. You still speak a different language, and you can't even fit in with the American-born Chinese. Yeah. So I think, like growing up, I just felt like, well, if the American-born Chinese, the ABCs, and the Asian community won't even accept me in their circles, I gotta somehow find my way to be friends with everybody. And so on the other hand, it made me feel like I don't have to be friends with Asians. I can be friends with the Hispanic, I can be friends with the Latinos, I can be friends with the Russians, I can be friends with white people, black people. Like, if we have something in common, like basketball or fashion, we can hang together. It didn't have to be about race. Mm-hmm. And that was, I feel like that was a big part of my experience growing up. And it was, I've never had a thing against ABCs, but it wasn't like, oh, hey, ABCs, yo, we're best buddies. No, like, I don't care either.
Yeah,
it's not a plus or minus. Just because you're Asian doesn't mean we're cool. It didn't have to be that way. And that's my experience growing up as an immigrant. Now, obviously, fast forward now, of course, I see how important it is for all Asians of all walks of life to unify.
Yeah.
But growing up, it was never like that. Because I just felt like, you guys didn't accept me.
Then, right.
I had to fight my way.
Yeah. And that builds out resentment moving into adulthood. That's why we have so much division, I think. It stems from that. And that's why we have that inner fighting, that weird inner fighting. It starts when you're younger. And
yeah. On the other hand, it pushed me to just be my best. That I'm not competing with Asians. I'm not just trying to be the Asian standard. I'm just trying to be the best in general, in any kind of race. I'm not trying to compete with the Asians for this job. I'm trying to compete with everybody. For this other job. And so I think like it's a different perspective. But I think that kind of goes on with like school into the real world. Because in the real world was like, in my experience, like working in finance at first, I was almost the only Asian, if not two or three Asian at my job at the same like team, right?
Yeah.
So it almost just feels like that kind of like token Asian.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I was working in finance. So I don't know, how was your experience like when you started working? Or
I think for me working, actually I kind of want to touch on a little bit about so That's funny because like a lot of Asian Americans that I interview, a lot of them are successful because of, it's not identical to your situation, but they're successful because they have that chip on their shoulder for being Asian. And then in your case was kind of the same, right? It wasn't just the chip on your shoulder because you're Asian, but also because of the ABCs too, push you to, all right, you know, like, okay,
this is how. I got to stand out even against the Asians.
Yeah.
So I got to be different from the Asians.
Yeah. So in a weird way, as much as like there's pain and like struggle with that, a lot of people who do overcome that, they find a way to actually do even better. And that's what I've noticed, man. Yeah. Like they have the chip on the shoulder and that gives them that motivation, that energy to do the next thing. And when it comes to, all right, go ahead. You got something to say?
I'm sure you also noticed too, is that obviously these guys that you're interviewing, they're obviously very great at what they do in their own industries. They had to break the cycle. They had to break the cycle of the typical Asian job, the typical Asian upbringing. They had to break it somewhere along the line, break free and do that, something that's special and different from everyone.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to work, I think I was pretty lucky. Like my first real corporate job was at Twitter and they're very diverse. So I never felt the issue. There was tons of Asian Americans working within the company with like in high positions and whatnot. And then even when I started working at Indeed, Indeed was different because I think when you go into sales, there's not a lot of Asian Americans that go into sales because Asian Americans, typically we go into like the back end jobs, right? Like the software engineers, the coders, the, you know, the people in the background you don't really see.
That's a great point.
And that's the reason why I went to sales, because I was like, I need to get out there. Because sales, you gotta be able to speak. You gotta put yourself out there. You gotta be very
sell me this pen.
Right. what is it? I forgot.
Wolf, it's like Wall Street. Yeah.
Sell me this pen. Okay, you got a piece of paper. It's like some of the piece of paper. Okay, you're gonna need this to sign, right? I think. Yeah, for sales, I was able to see the difference is where now we have like maybe 80% white on the sales floor. And I think in the entire office, there's only two Vietnamese, a few Asians, I think. We're like customer service. I think it was customer service. We all work together.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more Asians in the customer service field because they're just typing. They're not really on the phones talking to people. And I think my experience there was, of course, like for me and most of the guys that I speak with through interviews, they're always trying to represent. And I think you are too, right? Like as much as you don't want, even if you don't want to be involved with the community, you're still setting an example, whether you like it or not. You're setting an example of what an Asian man or person can be when you're out there, you're acting up, you're doing whatever. And I've always been the guy like, I'm going to be out there and show the best that we got. Always. But yeah, so for me, I know, and a lot of Asian guys can probably relate, but I always tried to be my best, man. Just to always either outbeat or poop people in any opportunity I could get, just to show people like, hey, we're not the typical media Asians.
I think like from a lot of things I talk about, I just say like, hey, everyone should just be the best version of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But what we realize is like the outcome, the results that we get is that you're representing Asian guys. Like, I think that's the impact afterwards. You might not be thinking about it initially as like, this is the most important thing I'm trying to do. But then you realize like, oh, this is the impact I'm having on the people afterwards, or that this could lead to something else.
Yeah. As much as we don't know it, we're all on the same journey. This very unique journey as an Asian American, honestly, I think, I don't know any other, well, maybe like South Indians too, I think maybe.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean,
I think they have a lot to prove too.
Yeah. That's why podcasts like this are so special. But that's why I think these podcasts are so special, because we need a place. We need something to have these kind of discussion, to talk about these things. Cause I'm sure as heck as most Asians and most immigrants feel and relate to all these things we're talking about. And I actually love what you talked about earlier. How you're talking about like a lot of Asians work on the back end. So I guess like on more the technical side of things, or more number side of things. Mm-hmm. And that's actually something I learned and realized early on when I was first working on Levitate Style. Because before Levitate Style, I was more of a photographer first. Like I felt in love with photography and travel. And even with my content back in the day, I used to post a lot of travel photos, like just photos without me in it at all. And something I also realized too is that like there's a lot of great Asian content creator and photographers out there, but guess what? People don't know they're Asian because it's just great photos. So in essence, it's almost like you're still on the back end. Like you're still behind the camera and your work is amazing. Your work could be great, but if your face is not there, they won't even know. They might not even acknowledge the fact that the creator is Asian. Mm-hmm. And I think that really hit home for me. I'm like, if my content is this powerful, if my content can change how the Asian community is being viewed, I have to put myself out there. Like by being in front of the camera, you literally go from a cool photo of a backdrop, a cool photo of New York City to, oh, this is an Asian guy traveling in New York City. And that can change the perspective so much. And that kind of just make me realize more and more how all these different industries, you know, marketing, PR, tech, a lot of Asians are working behind the scenes. A lot of people are the one making things happen behind, but we need more people in front now.
It's not by accident, man. I think it's just the way Asians in general are raised to be in the back end. And even for me, like I don't show my face a lot on Asian Menswear. I need to. And I feel weird when I post a picture of myself.
Yeah, but I tell you to do it because I think people need to know that you're there. Well,
yeah. So like, again, I think like you working in the back end, I took the sales job because I didn't want to, like, I wanted to get myself out of that back end work. Cause that's what I did when I created like the mobile app. I was always in the back end. No one knew who created it. And I like that. But now I'm realizing like you have to show your example or else others can't be empowered to do the same. And like even Bobby Hundreds, we had the same conversation. Mm. He said it wasn't until recently that he started to put his face out there.
That's what I thought.
I agree with you. And I was like, oh, I just assume you always had your face. Like, no, I recently started doing it. I'm still uncomfortable. But then he found it clicked in his head. He's like, wait, if I don't show my face, my kids will never know. I'm perpetuating that agents can't do all these things by not showing my face. I want my kids to see me and know that these designers are creating all these great things and they're Asian. Like he didn't realize that till later.
And I think that's the power of social media these days.
Now, right? Yep.
We have that the power. We realize to do it. Like it's personal branding and how important it is to see, because seeing is believing. Representation is everything. Mm-hmm. Social media has been changing that because it changed the way we view media in the past. The negative stereotypes we've seen for years on media, in magazines, on TV, movies, we have the power to change that. No. And Bobby is the perfect example because for years, like I've known the brand since I was like in high school.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't know it was an Asian creator that started it until a few years ago when he keeps having his face on there. He's talking. He's speaking.
He's way more active
when
now.
He's talking, when he's talking now, he's speaking as himself, but also the brand.
Yep.
And same thing with guys in streetwear, like Jeff Staples.
Staples, he brought him up too. He brought him up as well.
Yeah, so it's like in the past, it's, oh yeah, Staples Pigeon. It was one of the coolest, craziest collab sneaker. But we didn't know it was an Asian guy. I didn't know it was an Asian guy until recently.
Yeah.
So it's just like more and more, I think like we've had success being in the back. And now we realize how important it is to be in the front, especially when the spotlight on social media and how important personal branding is and how important representation is. And also how much we realize like a little piece of content there and there can change that. Literally that is the change that we need.
We need kids need to see it, you know? So I think that's the reason why it's so funny how everyone starts to click, even again, like as old as Bobby is, a little older, but he didn't recently find that. So it's like, sometimes you can be just blind and not see it. But I think Asians are in general are waking up and knowing that it's a bigger picture.
Yeah, that's for sure. And like now, like thinking back again, the main point that kind of inspired this episode, like, you know, the fact that I feel like we're too American for Asia, but at the same time, too Asian for America. So we already talked about how, like, in essence, we're, you know, you're born a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And I've, you know, I'm an immigrant, and now I've since become citizen about 10 years ago. But you know, there's still times where you feel like you're too Asian for America. Like, we're still not fully being accepted into society, into culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but what's crazy, I think, like, what's not even talked about enough is our experience when we go back home. Like, for me, my first home, obviously, is Hong Kong. So, man, when I go back home, when I go back to Asia, when I go to Hong Kong, like, they look at me as American. They're just like, oh, this guy, like, he speaks English. Like, he can't even speak Chinese properly. He can't order, you know, like,
yeah.
He walks around like he's American. Like, they can tell, because the locals can tell that you're not from here. Like, they can tell right away your body language, the way you walk, way you order food. Just like, even like the culture, because we're Americans. Like, we're the things we like, I don't know, coffee, tea, the food we eat in America is different. Like, you go to Hong Kong, like, they don't have some of those things. And that's how I feel. Even though I was born there and I go back and I visit my family, and when I'm there, I'm just like, they look at me and they're like, yo, this guy's American. Like, he, in essence, it's like, if I had to go back to Hong Kong to live and to work there, I felt like there's definitely a time that I have to adjust and change the way I am to live there. Cause it's so different.
Right. I mean, that happened to me when I went to Vietnam too. But in Vietnam, I mean, I don't know if it's the same, but do they look at you like in a good way? Because in Vietnam, if you're American, they look at you like you're like cool and like, ooh, like, come on in, okay. Like, treat you super nice because you're American. So that's my thing. And for me, I don't speak like Vietnamese well at all. I can understand maybe 80%. Some dialects I can't at all. Like the North dialect, I can't understand. My family's from the South. But going there, I for sure knew I was out of place. You know what I mean? As much as I am fully Vietnamese or part majority Vietnamese, I knew for sure that I'm different. I don't know. It's just
the language barrier to begin with.
That's, man, it's frustrating for me because I can understand them. I can't reply back.
Oh, wow.
So that was it's frustrating. It's the thing that I'm hoping to work on in the future, like actually learn it. So when I go back, I want to be able to communicate and have conversations, you know, instead of broken.
That's
being vitlish. You know, it's like,
that's how I feel too. Cause like with Cantonese Chinese in Hong Kong, I can understand it a lot more. And like when I spent like a week or two in Hong Kong, a lot of it kind of started like coming back. You're like, oh yeah, that's how they say this. Oh yeah, that's what they're talking about. And like, I understand it way more, but like to read and to speak it, it's not at the same pace, at the same level. So yeah, it literally feels like even though we're Asian and we go back to our home country, right? Like it feels like a whole loss in translation thing. That's literally what we're talking about. Like we feel like we're too American for Asia.
Right. I think the cool thing about, I think for the future, in the future, I think people are going to celebrate people that have culture, meaning they actually have like history, and like you're not just burgers and fries American, you know? I see that because I think there's a statistic that said like in 2042, the majority of people will be multiracial. So no one's actually going to be a certain race. And eventually, we're just going to be mixed.
One race? Yeah. There's so many mixed
Because of travel. Access to travel is accessible. Technology is allowing us to be able to reach other people. So as much as like we're proud about this, this is going to be normal. Like they're going to ask you, what's your ethnicity in a positive way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see us like making fun of different cultures in the future. So I think kids growing up now or being born now, like their future is really good. I mean, are you optimistic about that?
No, I definitely agree with that. And I think like,
I mean, you look at you and Alicia.
Yeah. I mean, like I'm in a mixed couple relationship and you know, but it also helps that this kind of interracial relationship can happen because both people are open to different cultures. They're open to trying out different things, you know? Imagine right off the bat, someone you're dating, they don't even want to try Asian food. Like, that's a tough part to cross over, because part of being open to dating other races, trying out their culture, you know, learning about their culture, trying their food, and, you know, learning about the history, different holidays that we celebrate that America doesn't celebrate, but we make the special effort to keep that tradition going and to still celebrate, to still eat different food, things like that.
I think it's going to be looked down upon, honestly. Like, if you don't, I think it's going to be looked down upon if you don't, if you're not open to different cultures. Because as much as people can't, if they won't admit to it, Chinese food is as American as a pizza. It really is, because Italians came here at a certain time. Pizza came from Italy, right? But we consider that American. But Chinese food has been here since forever. And Chinese is as American as Italians, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like
when you think of fried rice, that's as American as it is, man. So, honestly.
That, I mean, it feels good American to hear history. It. But it's crazy that obviously, like, people don't think of it that way. But it's, I mean, it's cool. I feel a sense of pride when you just said it like that.
It is. It's true, man. It's 100% true.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I think, like, when you think back about other groups and their history coming here,
it's the same thing.
And it's just like, yeah, I think it's weird when I first introduced Asian foods to some friends, you know, different people. They're like, oh, I don't eat chicken like that. I don't eat beef like that. And it's like, chicken is chicken. Like, beef is beef. And or like, they think, like, sometimes people think, oh, certain Asian foods are like weird and gross. But I'm like, you know, back in your homeland in like Poland or Ireland, like, they eat certain weird food too. Like, it's not an Asian thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, people need to get some real perspective when it comes to food. Cause I think they think certain things are weird and gross, but it's like, all different kinds of race eat all kinds of stuff.
Food,
it's not just us, right. You know? And it's just like crazy.
I just think it's because,
I mean,
go ahead.
No.
I just think because it's just Asians, we're like the newer immigrants here. So for a lot of the Polish or, like, you know, European Americans, they've settled here a long time ago. So the traditions have gone and passed. So a lot of the new generation, they don't understand, like, wait, your ancestors ate similar too. But because Asians are still taking the traditions, because we're coming to America, kind of recently, if you look at the history of the United States, that's why there's that. But eventually, it's going to be much different. We're just barely catching up, I think, in my opinion.
Yo, it's actually interesting. We were talking about, like, the holidays and stuff. I think, like, our previous generation, like our parents' generation, like, for example, like my parents, when we came here, and we're obviously just trying to fit in. You know, as immigrants, we're just trying to fit in with America. We're trying to fit in with the culture. We're trying to fit in with the holidays. And it came to, like, the traditional Chinese holiday. Year by year, we kind of slowly stopped celebrating them, because it's like, well, we don't have that much family here. And the family members here are, you know, they've kind of fit into American society and they don't celebrate it. So it's like, year after year, we celebrate less and less and less, to the point where it kind of just fade away. And then now, with this kind of, like, new awakening, our generation now, us, we're like, wait a second, we're starting to lose that part of us, that Asian part of us. Like, we've become so American fitting in that, wait a second, what about the Asian holidays? What about Lunar New Year? For me, Chinese is like, oh, we have the Mid-Autumn Festival. We have different, like, you know, the mooncake and hot pot and all these traditions that, growing up, it started to fade away. But now it's like, wait a second, this is actually really, really important and really cool. And I want to keep that going to remember how important this is, or how cool and special this is, or, like, have this kind of special food again. And I think, like, it's up to us to kind of make sure that tradition comes back and is alive for our next generation.
I agree. You know what's funny? This is just, like, a random note. Something that I heard that there was, like, a European, I don't know what she tweeted, but she's like an illegal, essentially, from Europe. But because her skin is white, they don't consider her as an illegal, as if, you know, a Latino or an Asian. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. There's definitely people that are like white passing, and now they're in, you know, they're essentially white people. If you're being treated as white, like, you know, you're kind of losing your culture in a way, and you have, in essence, a different level of privilege.
Oh yeah, because they don't have to go through like trying to earn their right to live here. Like literally, just because your skin is white, people just assume you're American, and you've already earned it. While people fight throughout their whole life just to prove that we're just as American. It's crazy to think
we don't have the luxury of that. Like, there's none of us Asians can ever be like, oh no, he looks white. Like he can be white, unless you're mixed. But like, I've also known other influencers that are different race, but they can pass for white, and I think that has really helped them grow in the beginning, because it's like the rest of the world, the rest of Instagram, you know, the rest of these guys, they're looking for people to follow, and they're, oh yeah, here's another good looking white looking dude, this white looking menswear guy or something. And then I think it's like years after he realized, like, oh no, like I want to celebrate and represent for his race and his community. You know, like some people, they become so white passing. It worked out for them. But then after a while, they're like, wait a second, like I'm not white actually. Like I need to represent to make sure that I speak out for my
community. What's an example of white passing?
What's that?
What's an example like white passing, like a Spanish person?
Yeah, yeah. That's like one example that I've definitely seen.
Portuguese
in the past.
Seem look white almost.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Europeans, like the ones that, you know, that you can see that, there's definitely, I'm sure there's some South Americans that could look white passing per se.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we don't have that kind of, we don't have that. You know, and we kind of talked about it in this episode where we're constantly fighting to be noticed, to have the spotlight, to break out.
I think it starts with like adding our history into the history books. Like I posted about the 442, which is like a combat unit from World War II, which comprised of Japanese Americans, and they are the most decorated military unit. But yet when you're looking in the history book, they're not mentioned at all. So for people that are reading it, if Asian Americans are not in our history, of course they're not American. We don't exist because we're not in it. We didn't do any contributions to America. You know, even Asians don't even know about the 442.
Dude, that's just crazy. Yeah. I think this is exactly, that's a perfect example of why we're talking about this, because we're too American for Asia. But in America, no matter if you've been in the army, if you served the country,
been in the damn country for generations.
Exactly. If you were born here, you know, like you're born American, people are going to just look at like, you're Asian, you're Chinese, go back to your country.
Yeah.
You're too Asian for America. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly what we're talking about. Just like, damn.
I think it doesn't help that we're like enemies with like China, so to speak, you know?
And that was another thing I heard about. Oh, here's another great point that I heard about over the past few weeks, which I thought was a really great perspective. So people complain and joke, but they conspiracy how, oh, China has been manufacturing all these things. Now China has so much power to take over the world. Mm-hmm. But guess who benefited the most with cheap labor in China manufacturing? All these companies in America.
Mm-hmm.
All these people that had the American dream to start a business. Where do they find cheap labor? Where do they find cheap products and power to manufacture all these factories to build the product to make them rich in America?
Now we go back and blaming them.
Exactly. People in America, rightfully so and smartly so, use China to create products, to create a business that benefits them ultimately in America. But then on the outside, we're like, oh no, America, China, oh no. Like, and then on the outside, they're looking, oh, China has all this power. They make everything. Everything is made in China. They're taking over the world. So it's like, which is it? Jesus. Like, like, right. I thought that was a very fresh perspective, because obviously I've heard the one end, but I haven't heard, oh yeah, well, guess who's been making, you know, guess who's been creating all these businesses and who benefits the most from it.
You know, would be cool to get someone that's in mainland China and interview them and like how they view the U.S.
Oh,
get that perspective.
That is interesting.
You know what I mean?
Like, because it's a whole other country. Like, to them, it's just like, wow, look at that situation, that mess over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's different.
We definitely went, took some tangents on this one. But as I'm saying, like, we're just having a conversation and it leads to different parts. But I think we're right at the time anyway.
I think we cover a lot of great points. You know, we both shared our experience growing up as Asian in
native
different
names.
Parts of the country. We share our native name exclusive. We talked about our experience growing up and like how we had to deal with either, you know, for you was finding more Asians, and for me it was actually competing against Asians and coming out of that.
Yep.
And then again, our own experience going back, you know, me going back to Hong Kong, you going back to Vietnam, and how we're essentially two American for Asia, but yet at the same time, whatever we've done in America, we're too Asian.
We'll never know what it's like to grow up in a country where they accept you fully. You know, it's crazy.
It's different, because
we'll never know that because we moved to different spots and you broke that chain when you left Hong Kong. So now you'll never be accepted as like, you know what I mean? Like being born in China, being Chinese, and then staying there. I wonder what that feels like. Or me being born in Vietnam and then staying in Vietnam, like how that would feel. It's interesting.
I mean, I have family there, and I'll tell you, I mean, I'm very thankful I'm in America. I also feel like in Hong Kong, it's super competitive and you're just like everyone else. Yeah, I also think like, you know, I have relatives in Hong Kong, so I know what it's like, what it could be like in Hong Kong. It's super competitive. Everyone is, you know, trying to compete with each other. And it's even harder to stand out because everyone is Chinese. Everyone is Asian there. And so, you know, we're not saying like one side is better than the other, but I'm ultimately very thankful I'm in America because I have all these different opportunities. And we have that freedom.
Me too.
Yep. To break out and do our own thing in America. And that's ultimately, like, that is what I love about America, that
you can do it.
Marketing and advertising, and we're so creative in that way that we're able to have social media and do things like this to talk about representation, let alone, you know, and fight for representation. Because you could easily just be a bunch of sheeps and be in the same uniform and conform the same in
survive.
Hong Kong, in Asia. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, we went over the time a little bit. But, yeah, I'm interested in hearing, if you guys are listening, what your names were. What was your experience with your name? Do you guys think fried rice is American as pizza?
Oof.
What was your Asian experience in America growing up? And, you know, how do you feel about yourself now? I think, and what do you potentially see this whole conversation with representation or feeling proud about your culture is going to look like in the next 30 years? Those are the questions, hopefully, that you guys think about. But hopefully, you guys enjoyed me and Leo sharing some exclusive stuff today with you guys. And we'll catch you guys for the next episode. You guys take care. Peace.